There's a story in the Gospel of John about a man named Lazarus. Perhaps you've heard about this man named Lazarus. Well, Jesus was at a time, I'm not sure if you're familiar with where the Jordan River is, but the Jordan River runs from the Sea of Galilee down to the Red Sea. And Jesus with his disciples were on the east side of the Jordan River at this time. Jesus had run into some life-threatening situations in Jerusalem shortly before. And so he goes over to the other side of the Jordan River because he knows that if he stays in Jerusalem, they're going to basically keep trying to kill him until they succeed. And he knew it wasn't his time. So they're on the east side of the Jordan River. Well, while they're there, he has a close friend named Lazarus who gets sick. He gets seriously sick. That Lazarus's oldest sister, Martha, sends word to Jesus. They were extremely close friends. Sends word to Jesus, and she says, has the message say, tell the Lord that the one he has loved, Lazarus, is sick. And Jesus' words after hearing that Lazarus is sick, this will not end in death. And he continues to stay on the east side of the Jordan River for 2 more days. And in that time, he does seemingly nothing. Well, then it gets to be the time after 2 days, and Jesus says to his disciples, his 12 closest friends, he says, all right, it's time for us to go to Lazarus because he has fallen asleep. And it's time for us to go and wake him up. And his disciples say, well, you said that this wasn't going to end in death. You said that he has just fallen asleep. So if he's sleeping, basically if he gets enough rest, he'll be okay. He'll feel better. And Jesus says to his disciples, he's dead. He says it literally. He says, you misunderstood what I'm saying. I mean, Lazarus is dead. And his disciples, they have to be questioning, you knew that this would happen. You knew this, that you stayed. I don't get what in the world you're up to. What is it that you're doing? Well, he goes, and sure enough, they come back to Bethany, which is right near Jerusalem, and his disciples are saying, Jesus, I don't think we should go because you already said he's dead, all right? So what are we going to go for? We're heading back to the area of Jerusalem where they just tried to kill you. You know that you're basically walking into a hornet's nest, and your life is going to be threatened, and Jesus says, this is what we're doing. This is where we're going. So Jesus comes with his disciples into the city of Bethany, which is about 2 miles is all from Jerusalem. It's virtually the same area. It would be similar where you're, if you live on the west side of town and you decide to go to Coburn's, that's about the distance is really all that we're looking at here. And so Jesus and his disciples, they come into Bethany, and before they get to the house, Martha, this oldest of the siblings, comes up to Jesus and she's weeping. And she's brokenhearted, and she's sorrowful, and she says, if you had been here, he would have lived. And Jesus already knows that Lazarus is dead. Perhaps this is the confirmation that the disciples hadn't yet seen. Jesus said he's dead. But here they come in, and they see Martha, and she says to Jesus, if you had been here, if you could have changed it, if you had been here. And Jesus says to Martha, Martha, Lazarus will live again. When we go to, and we believe this fully, this is not just empty words, but we go to funerals and we engage with the family and we say, the person, if they have had a relationship with Jesus Christ, they're in a better place, we're going to see that we end. And those are all true words. But sometimes when you're in the midst of the sorrow, that's really tough to hold on to. It's really it's comforting to a degree, but in the midst of that pain, it's just, I'm sorry, that's just not quite the salve that I'm looking for on this sorrowful heart. So Jesus says to Martha, the oldest, says, your brother will rise again. And Martha answers. She says, I know that, all right? I know he will rise again in the resurrection, that there's going to come this last day where we will be reunited with Christ. She recognizes that. She knows that. And she says, yep, I know. Thank you for your words of comfort. I get that. And Jesus said to her, and this perhaps is one of the most important things you're going to hear this morning, because Jesus responds to her. Martha, who's brokenhearted, she's lost her brother. He's died from this sickness. Jesus could have stopped it. And Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. You know, not only this resurrection that you're talking about, how one day we'll be up with Christ. Yep, that's true. And in fact, just so you know, Martha, I am that resurrection. And then he also goes on to say, and just so you understand this, dealing with this idea of life, you know, okay, Lazarus was alive. Now he's dead. We'll talk about that in a little bit. He's dead. I am life. And it's a life that you really haven't even fully understood. And you're going to see some things that are just going to blow your socks off here in a little bit, Martha. So just hang on. And so he says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. And he asks her, do you believe this? And she says, yes. I don't think she's fully understood that. So what Martha does then is Martha then goes, she has a sister. Her sister is Mary. So we have Martha, she's the oldest. We have Mary, she's younger, and it's believed that Lazarus was the little brother. So the youngest of the three has died. So Martha goes to Mary. This is the same Mary, if you've read in the scriptures, that took this bottle of perfume and poured it over Jesus' feet and then took her hair and dried his feet with her hair. I mean, there's a contrast between who Martha is and who Mary is in the scriptures. Martha is a very type A type person. If you're a type A and you like things just to be so, and if we're going to be there at a certain time, that's the time that we're going to be there. That is Martha, and you may fit into that, all right? If you're having company over, it's Easter, by the way, if you didn't know that. And if you have company coming over and you're not aware that they're coming over, this is going to throw you in a big loop if they just text you 5 minutes before they come and say, by the way, we're coming. I mean, you're type A, you're not going to handle that well. That's Martha. She's busy. She's always got to have things just so. Mary is not that way. Mary is much more, yeah, sure, come on over. You know, I haven't done laundry in 3 weeks. You know, you might have to walk over some clothes, but it works great for carpeting. Carpeting needs to be replaced anyway, so just walk on the clothes. It feels good on your feet. That's a little bit more Mary style. So we have these sisters in this contrast, and what we have then is so Martha goes and she gets Mary, and Mary comes to Christ, and she comes out of the house, and it says that she's weeping, she's wailing, and there's this crowd of people. It's interesting culture. In that time, what would happen is people would go and join the mourners, even if you weren't family. In a sense, you would help them cry. In some cases, even they would hire people to come in and comfort you, and they would actually mourn with you. They were called wailers, in a sense. So what would happen is, as Mary comes out of the house then, she's heard that Jesus is coming. And so as Mary comes out of the house, it says that this crowd is following Mary and they're just wailing. So there's this noise, kind of this groaning that's coming with Mary as she comes. I mean, just huge sorrow, pain. And it comes to this point and Jesus asks Martha and Mary says, where have you put the body? And while he's in the tomb, that's where we put dead bodies. And Jesus goes to the entrance of the tomb. You got Mary there. You got Martha. They're both crying. You have all these people, and there's just this chaos. I mean, chaos is the right word, but it is. It's just this noise. It's just like people are just wailing. And Jesus stands at the front of the tomb, and he saw Mary weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also who were weeping and were wailing. He was deeply moved in his spirit, and he was troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see. And so they take Jesus there. This whole crowd is going. And it says in verse 35, you know, the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. I mean, just the emotion. The fact that Jesus loved, and it says in the scriptures, Jesus loved Martha, Jesus loved Mary, Jesus loved Lazarus, and he sees the pain that they're going through. He doesn't take the pain away, but he weeps with them. It says, Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loves them. And so Jesus is at the tomb, and you see this emotion. And so Jesus has some words for them. He says, all right, take away the stone. And their response is wonderful. It says, okay, just wait a minute. Wait. Before we take away the stone, Jesus, you have to understand something. Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. This was a number of years ago. My younger brother, my dad, and I, we were out deer hunting, and I believe we were done for the day, and we're driving home, and we come across, there's this large, dead buck laying in the ditch. You know, and you're hunting. You know, you can't help, but it's like, what in the world's going on here? And so we stopped, My dad stayed in the vehicle. He was the smart one. My little brother and I, we come out to look at this thing, and it's got a nice set of antlers, and it's curious, you know, what happened? Someone shoot it and just died here, whatever. And so we take it and we kind of lift it to flip it up, and the whole thing just goes, wow. Okay. I don't know how long that had been sitting there, but it wouldn't surprise me if that one was less than 3 days. And there's a reality when Jesus says to them, take away the stone, really, I'm not kidding, that's probably what they were faced with, where the stone gets rolled away and there's just psh. And then Jesus does something just amazing. He calls into the tomb, into this echoing chamber, in a loud voice, he says, Lazarus, come out. And here comes this man who's been dead for 4 days, raised from the grave, and he comes out of the tomb. And Jesus, this is my favorite part. Jesus says to him, take off your grave clothes, because you're dead no longer. You know, that which we encompass around ourselves, you know, that's what happens, all right? You're dead, you get put in your grave clothes. In this culture, you've been wrapped in cloths, this embalming process, and you would have been laid in the tomb. Well, he comes out, his hands and feet were probably bound. I don't know how he walked. You know, have you ever done like one of those three-legged races? You know, it's a little bit awkward if your partner just decides not to go with you, all right? You end up dragging him back behind you. But there's this picture how here comes Lazarus, maybe in this stench, and Jesus says, take off the grave clothes because you are dead no longer. And that's interesting is this is right before what we end up finding is it's just a number of weeks, days. What's going to happen here now is Jesus kind of he removes himself from this area and he goes and kind of stays in a quieter, secluded place so that his time, when it comes, he'll go back to Jerusalem. But at the time, it's not there yet. And so he kind of pulls himself back. And as he's pulling himself back, then we see this, finally there's this time where it's time to go to Jerusalem. And so then he and his disciples going, and he knows full well what's going to happen. And he brings Lazarus with him. And so they come back into Jerusalem, and Lazarus is now known as, hey, you were that dead guy that's not dead anymore. And the religious leaders, they see him, and they're singing. They're so upset with Jesus, they see him, you are a threat. You are not only a threat to me and my power, but you're a threat to this whole nation. Because when Rome sees what it is that you're doing, they're going to come and they're going to come down with that iron fist and they're going to squash us, and I don't want that. And so they basically plot, we need to kill Jesus, but we got this problem. There's this Lazarus guy, remember, he's the one that Jesus raised from the dead. We got to kill him too. Long story short, it's not much longer after that that Jesus goes to the cross. And we've heard the story. He's arrested, he's denied, he's betrayed. He goes to the cross. He is hung on the cross. He has been beaten, he's been tortured, and again, it's not the beating, it's not the pain that he's feeling physically that's the hardest part for him. It's having all, like Joetta talked about with that black shirt, all of the sin of mankind rests upon his shoulders. That was, I'm convinced, more excruciating than any physical pain that he had to endure. All of that weighing down on him, and he died. He's put in his own tomb. And then 3 days later, we see what he had done to Lazarus now becomes part of his story. It says, then the disciples, they went back to their homes. They had just heard this report that this tomb is empty. They don't know what's going on. The tomb is empty. But Mary stayed outside of the tomb. This is the same Mary that was just weeping over Lazarus's tomb. It's the same Mary. And now she's weeping outside of the one who raised Lazarus from the grave. But Mary stood outside the tomb crying. And as she wept, she bent over to look inside the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. And they asked her, woman, why are you crying? They have taken away my Lord, she said, and I don't know where they have put him. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. Woman, he said, why are you crying? Who is it that you're looking for? Thinking he was just the gardener, she said, sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will go and get him. And Jesus said to her, Mary. Jesus turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. Jesus said, don't hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God, Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, I have seen the Lord. With this news, like, remember what Jesus did with Lazarus? Remember how he was dead? You guys were there. They took away the stone and he called out and Jesus and Lazarus rose again. He was alive. The same thing has happened to Jesus. I have just seen him with my own eyes. Jesus is alive. And if that's not an amazing enough story, I feel that it gets better when we flip over into the book of Ephesians. Because Ephesians, what happens now is the Apostle Paul takes everything that Jesus Christ has just done and he can kind of lay it out for us. And here's what it says in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 4. Because of his great love for us. This is Jesus. Because of Jesus' great love for us. God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms. In Christ Jesus, in order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Christ, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this not from yourselves, it is the gift of God. Not by works, so that no one can boast, for we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. It was about 4 weeks ago or so, I was riding my bicycle. And I like to go early morning, and so this was 4 weeks ago. It was still dark when I left. And I got a nice bright light, and so I can ride out and see most everything that's coming my way. And as I was riding out on this wooded trail, there's a spot of mud. I've been on this trail before. I knew there was a spot of mud there. And it's not just a little spot. I mean, this is pretty vast. I knew there was mud. And so I knew that I wanted to stay one side or the other. I normally go to the right, but for whatever reason, this side I thought I'm just going to veer off to the left and kind of avoid the deepest part of it. So I was pedaling hard, I was standing on the pedals, I was a little bit high on my center of gravity, and as I was veering to the left, my rear wheel washed out, and I went down. And I caught a tree root right in the flank, right in the ribs. I have self-diagnosed myself with two broken ribs. Well, you know, think about it. Okay, so you could go, and I checked with, you know, you guys know Dave Jorgensen, he's a doctor here in town. I asked him, I said, how important is it for me to go in and get my ribs x-rayed? He said, it's not important. Okay, so my diagnosis, it stands. And so I self-diagnosed myself with two broken ribs, and it was painful. I mean, this is like, wow, it hurt to breathe, it hurt to lay down, it hurt to cough. That was sneezing was one of the worst. Have you ever had that? Terrible. So as being that I felt at privilege to self-diagnose myself then, I also self-prescribed, you know. And so then I would take basically 4 ibuprofen every 6 hours or so because the pain, it was pretty significant. And so as part of that, I would just take a little bit of ibuprofen. And it would take the edge off, you know. It would help. I would feel like, there, okay, now I can at least function. You know, it's interesting, if you remember last summer, I still have some issues with it, but I had this voice issue, and we learned that I had self-diagnosed myself with that one, too. I self-diagnosed myself with throat cancer. I know. I was wrong on that one, okay? That doesn't mean I'm wrong about the rib thing. It just means I was wrong about that one. So anyway, I went in for that one because it just wasn't getting better, and I found out it was acid reflux, which is just like throat cancer. Anyway, it was fascinating. So one of the doctors that I was seeing, he had a great insight, you know, because he's working with me to know how to, we talked about this, is the way you're going to use your voice. He said, you're supposed to talk in soothing type. Remember that? And I don't do that. I know I should, and I try to at some capacities. But he says, the way you talk, it affects it. And then he also went into what you eat and what you don't eat. Those are all factors that are going to help with this. It's a long-term solution. And it's a struggle to do it. And he said, you know what we find is most people that come in, all they really want is a pill. All they really want is something that's just going to, something they can take that either takes the edge off, makes the pain go away. But isn't that what we all do? In some capacity, we, in this culture, excuse me, I'm burping up water. It's that acid reflux. It's not throat cancer, just so you know. But that's what we do, is we kind of self-medicate. You know, we have this pain, and all that's, and it goes kind of like this, where, things just aren't good at home. Yeah, with my marriage, you know, and so maybe what we do is we start looking at, things aren't real good. I'm gonna start looking at going somewhere else. Maybe I'll leave my spouse. You know, there, that took the edge off. You know, or maybe what it ends up being is like, I feel so lonely. You guys are all worried I'm going to OD, right? Two things. One, it's very difficult to OD in ibuprofen. I just want to be clear. And the other is, if I go down, Chris, just slide me off the side. You just keep going, okay? just continue. You know, but maybe sometimes it's like, I feel so lonely. You know, I feel so lost. And we turn to things like the internet. You know, maybe Facebook, maybe we turn to pornography even. Something to try to self-medicate, because all we really want to do, we don't want to deal with the pain, the emotional pain. We don't want to deal with any of that. All we want to do is be comfortable. And so we pop some more. Yeah, that's better. And it's better for a while. You know, but then some other pain comes up. Maybe it's emotional pain. Maybe it's pain of a loss. And so we kind of withdraw. We go back into ourselves and we... Yeah. That's better. I brought two bottles of water. Just in case one gets lodged in my throat from my throat cancer. But I want you to grasp this, okay? Choosing to say yes to Christ is not going to make all the pain go away. You know, it's not. And what we want to do, in a lot of cases, what we really want is, we don't want life. We want a comfortable life. And I think Jesus is actually, he's not promising you a comfortable life. In fact, if you look at what Jesus' life was, it was extremely uncomfortable. He was threatened under death, and that's why he was over on the other side of the river in the first place. His disciples, even after Jesus died, they were, in many cases, tortured before they were killed. Jesus doesn't call us to comfort. And we want comfort. I get that. We want to kind of medicate that pain thing. And so we turn to Jesus. Jesus, all I really want to do is, I just want you to make me feel better. And so instead of getting that diagnosis right, you know, so that it can actually fix the problem, all we really want is, like the doctor said, all I really want is a pill. Just give me something that makes me not hurt so much. You know, it would be similar if I went to the doctor and I did have cancer and I said, I know that there's treatments for cancer, but it's kind of painful. Can you just give me something for the pain? We'll just kind of pretend the rest doesn't exist. When it comes to Jesus, here we are. We're faced with him. He is Jesus Christ, who raised Lazarus from the grave. He raised himself from the grave, and now he's offering to raise us from the proverbial grave. And what we do, and when we self-medicate, we decide, I'm going to keep on the grave clothes. And Jesus is saying, get rid of the grave clothes. Take them off, because you don't have to be dead any longer. You can say yes to Christ. You do not have to be dead any longer. Here's how we're going to wrap up the service. I think that every one of us at some point can relate to this idea that we've had to have a second chance. You know, we've messed up something in our life, and we can either look back and say, man, I wish I could go back and do that again. Or we just look back and it's like, that is such a dark place that I was in, and we can't let it go because we continue to linger in that spot. It's like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And we fall into that, the idea of the repetitive depression, and we're just needing something and someone to pull us out. I want to emphasize, Jesus is constantly giving second chances. You know, we look at the idea of a second chance means like, well, you get one more chance. It's more than that. It's this never-ending second chance. And Jesus is offering each one of us a second chance. And I'm convinced that every one of us in this room needs a second chance. If you have never said yes to Christ, and you know the sin that you have in your life, and it's time to say yes to Christ, you need this second chance. For those who have said yes to Christ in the past, I know it. Oh, I need a second chance after second chance after second chance. We need second chances. And so what I'd like you to do is in your bulletins, in your worship folders, I have three questions. And I'm going to give you different options by which you can respond to these. This is really, it's for you. If you feel like you want to share it with someone else, I encourage you to do this over. There's three questions. And what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you prayerfully reflect on these three questions, and I encourage you to answer them while the worship team is going to come in just a moment, and we're going to sing. And as we're singing a song, I want you to be prayerful, okay, and looking at these questions. You know, the first question is, what do I need a second chance from? You know, can you identify something where you've messed up? It's like, oh, that, man, I wish I could go back and redo that. What do you need a second chance from? What are you using to kind of numb the pain of life? Where are you settling for this idea of just comfort as opposed to the real life that Christ has for us? And then finally, are you ready to say yes to Jesus and to become alive again? Just as Lazarus became alive again and Jesus raised himself and became alive again, he's offering us to become alive again. That's what I ask you to do then. You can do several things. You can fill this out. You can slide it in your Bible. You can tear it out. Just kind of keep it to remind yourself. I'm okay with that. If you want to communicate this to the church, we are not in any way trying to solicit and thumb anyone down. It's like we're gonna trap you here. This is not that. We care about where you're at. We care about your relationship with the Lord. If you want to tear it off, if you want to put your name, your email, we'll follow up with you. We'll say, hey, how are you doing? We'll say, hey, if you want to talk some more, just write that on there as well, and you can leave it with one of the ushers on the way out of the service. And you can leave it with one of the ushers without your name on it. I don't care. What I do care about is your relationship with the Lord. And that's what I care about. You know, we're not trying to boost any numbers or track anything down, but we care about your relationship with the Lord.